This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, together with Tan Chen Li and Philip C. in an undisclosed bunker location in the suburbs of Petaling Jaya. And of course, we are The Morning Run. It is 6 a.m. in the morning, Wednesday, the 16th of March. And we're halfway through the week. Where did Monday, Tuesday go?
It went very fast. And can I just say, I'm so privileged that I haven't showered yet after my run. I haven't brushed my teeth yet. And those are the wonderful perks of doing this at home.
Oh, do we need to know that?
Thanks for sharing this very...
EMI.
Yeah. Personal information with us. But you managed to do a run before the show. Well done. Because it is 6 a.m. What time did you go out for the run?
4:15 in the morning. People thought I was weird.
Oh my. Were there other people or were you the only crazy?
Well, there were a couple of dogs who tried to chase me and bark and wake up everybody else in the process, but it was fine. I enjoyed
it. Okay, so at least the dogs motivated you to move a little bit faster, yes, which is exactly a plus. But as usual, we've got a very packed show today. At 7:15, we'll be having a conversation with Dr. Nungsari. He's an economist, and we're going to be talking about the role of GLCs in the Malaysian economy. What's happening at 7:30, Philip?
We're going to speak to Charles Goddard. He's an editorial director from The Economist Impact, as we have a conversation about ocean pollution,
which is probably getting worse and worse
Sure.
Yeah. What's that followed by, Chen Li?
7:45, we'll be talking about 1MDB.
Oh, this is the gift that keeps on giving and more revelations every day.
That's right. So yesterday came out from the news that the former Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, received $756 million. So we'll be talking to P. Gunasegaram on whether these revelations impact the ongoing 1MDB trial with our Najib is facing.
Okay, so as usual, Guna is very well versed in all things related to 1MDB. He did write a book about it, very detailed book, so do pick it up if you have a chance. Yes, but I think everybody's watching, looking at all these nitty-gritty details about people's personal lives that are coming out in the trial.
Yeah, and Shaoning, the politics doesn't end, isn't it? We are entering now UMNO General Assembly. We also have the Deputy DAP Secretary General post being discussed. But we have a very interesting guest at 8:45, don't we?
I know, we do. We have the comeback kid or the possible comeback kid.
Question mark.
But do tune in at 8:45 because that comeback kid is Rafizi Ramli. Let's hear from him firsthand what his plans are, how he's going to change the party and whether he can get to the number two post. And why not number one? Interesting stuff. But we'll be back with this, with more after these messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Come Undone by Duran Duran. I don't know whether it's Pakatan Harapan's song for the week. Because, as usual, as we know, they didn't have such a stellar showing at the Johor State elections, right? So,
Yeah, well, maybe. It could be also the state of my mind as well.
Yeah. our constant state of mind. But up next, we've got an interesting story. And I think it's about how work has evolved and how ever so often there are these new job creations, new job titles that just fascinate me. And I'm like, hello, people, this is work. What do you expect? But never mind. Chen Li, you chose this story. Tell us what this is all about.
So if you are looking to hire another officer, maybe you want to consider to hire a chief happiness officer. So you have your... the title actually is very interesting because it says that the person takes care of employees' happiness and well-being. And a few companies has already have such a role, such as high street retailer Timson, even Clifford Chance in London.
Which is the big law firm, right?
One of the oldest law firm is also embracing this new trend. So something that this role is very important because a chief happiness officer should even sit on the board alongside CEOs and have far-reaching powers. But there are some who says that this chief happiness officer need to do more than just perks, bonuses, free food or free fruits, free coffee or whatever, enforce fun or whatever, because you need to concentrate on what really make people happy at work. You know, not just these kind of perks and small stuff, right? So that leads me to this question. What defines the happiness of employees?
Okay, so for some context, this is an article, obviously not in a Malaysian newspaper. It's a UK newspaper. I never heard of chief happiness officer in an Asian workplace. Okay, let's go around the room, shall we? Philip C., do you think companies should have a chief happiness officer? Should you derive happiness in the workplace?
What Definitely not. I do not subscribe to this idea at all. I think it's a terrible, terrible idea. First and foremost, look, the pandemic has hit a lot of people. And yes, I can imagine many frontliners operations are like, let's focus on operations. So there is a need to refocus on well-being for sure. But I don't think it necessitates calling for a C-suite role to define happiness. As my dad used to say when he ran his business, I don't pay for your happiness.
A lot of parents also say that to their children, by the way. But yeah, anyway, yes.
But is this a millennial thing?
I don't know. I don't know why companies feel the need to have this chief happiness officer. Do they think by slapping on a title to someone, paying them a lot of salary, suddenly a lot of problems will be resolved overnight? And in this context, I agree with you. You don't, I would say you don't, you should, the workplace should not be the fountain of happiness in your life. Something is wrong about that. I do think it should not be the fountain of sadness and depression either. But it should not be the 110% of your being. And if you go to work just to find happiness, maybe unless you do something that is really, you know, your core, you started the business, maybe it's a charity, it's an NGO, it's a cause you really believe in, possibly. But for a lot of us, like who are worker bees, I do enjoy my time in work, but I don't think I would derive 110% of happiness from it.
I kind of think of what exactly is this chief happiness officer's role? I mean, how do you make people happy at work? Because
pay them better, treat them better, respect them better. It's as simple as that, I think, and not overwork them.
But it could also be complicated. It could be a leadership issue that makes them unhappy. You know, does it mean that the chief happiness officer have to change the leader for them?
No, I think that's something that's not the chief happiness officer's role, is it?
Well, yes, I don't think so. And this is also the slight issue where we also talk about human capital, right? The chief HR officer. You know, many business people, many lines think, oh, okay, if I have a HR problem, I'll just go to HR. Where sometimes actually it's the responsibility of the manager to kind of make sure that you also kind of manage the HR-related issues in your department, isn't it? So I worry that if you end up doing this happiness officer role, then you also don't give responsibility for the business to drive outcomes, right, holistically. That's my biggest issue about creating all these functions. That in the end, you're just creating this piece, you're absconding and delegating, you know, the responsibility of the manager to ensure that you create a safe, secure, trusted environment to do your work productively. And then you say, oh, I got this problem, I'll pass it to the CHO now.
Well, I just think that, you know, sometimes there are trends, right? So at the moment, this is the trend. And like you say, you know, if you slap on a title, it will suddenly be resolved. But for me, I'm like, look, happiness, what does it really mean in the office? And, you know, we want to be happy. Don't get me wrong. I think happiness is important. You want to come to work. You want to enjoy the workplace environment. You want to feel that you belong. And I think family as a concept in the office does make a difference. But at the same time, it's not the company's job to make you feel happy, happy. You're paid. You're paid. It's a contract in a way. You're paid to deliver a certain amount of work.
Absolutely. And for me, what I worry about is that when you create this title, the individual feels that I am not responsible for my happiness. What that I have to pass on and rely on someone else for my happiness. And that is something for me a bit worrying. I would like to be responsible for my own destiny and also where my whole well-being as well.
Yes. Do you agree, Chen-Li? You're the only one that kind of thinks that the chief happiness officer makes sense.
No, I didn't actually.
Okay, you don't?
I don't think that makes sense because I think that happiness is very complex. Not something that a CHO can solve by, you know, not easily solved.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And work to each person is so unique. It's so different, right? In terms of what we want, our hopes, our goals, our dreams. There's no easy solution to if you're unhappy at work. Yep. But maybe at least have that conversation with your immediate boss rather than the chief happiness officer.
Exactly.
But we're heading into some messages and we'll be discussing a little bit more about
benefits.
Benefits. Yeah. Laundry being one of them. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that song was Sweet Disposition by The Temper Trap, which is a contradiction in terms of the name of the song and the band. And it's something that I certainly don't have. I don't have a sweet disposition.
No. Well, I have plenty of that sweet disposition. I'm
if
sure.
you say so. Self-praise is no praise. Anyway, 6:20 in the morning, Wednesday, the 16th of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. And that voice, of course, was Philip C. Joining me in the studio is also Tan Chen Li, and I'm Wong Xiaoning. Now, we're talking about continuing this little conversation about work. And another part of work is the benefits that come with work. But when I read this article from New York Times, all I have is envy, envy, envy. Because even though perks are being removed, there are still many, many, many perks that Meta, aka Facebook, still has despite removing some of them. Tell us about this story, Chen Li.
And one of the most famous one is laundry and dry cleaning services. I'm like, oh my God, is there such a benefit at all? The first time that I'm hearing
it, actually.
So,
for sure, right?
Yes, but unfortunately, Phil, they are removing it. So the bad news is that because they're thinking that they're gonna shift into the whole hybrid workplace model, and this benefit, some other benefits as well, they are reviewing it and they're changing it. So along with this change, they're also changing the free employee dinner meals. So it's very interesting. They change it by changing the timing. So instead of 6 o'clock, they offer it at 6:30. But the last shuttle to go back to, I think, their accommodation is 6 o'clock. So they make it very difficult for you to have dinner, which I think it's all right, pretty interesting. But my thought on this is, why are companies really doing this? Is this really just an excuse that saying that we're going into the whole hybrid model, or is this just a measure to save cost?
Okay. Wait first. Let's say that Facebook is not unique, right? Because even Google, a lot of the big tech companies do this, but. Maybe, yeah. What motivates them now to withdraw these benefits? Philip, what do you think?
Well, firstly, when I saw the title, Facebook parent company will make employees do their own laundry, I was like, cry me a river, literally. Because honestly, like, this is something every adult should be doing. Of course, although in Malaysia, we have a hanger, right, where we have the sun, which makes things dry quite fast. So we don't really have to pay for it so much. But my take is really, you know, they had all these tech companies, especially, right? They had put all these interesting perks at the height of their performance. And of course, two things have happened in the past 2 years, isn't it? You've seen the pandemic where people now don't really think about coming to office so often. That's one. And the second thing is that, look, they're not performing as well as they used to do, right? They're not at the height of their performance if we look at the likes of Meta and such. Mm. So naturally, all this is being reviewed again in view of these changing circumstances. But my question again is, perhaps for someone like me, is don't need to give me the perks, give me, translate it to financial incentives and let me decide what to do with it instead of, you know, thrusting it in my face. That's my perspective about these perks usually.
Very practical.
I just want the money.
Philip is a Chinaman at the end of it all.
I'm in my bone a Chinaman, I think. Just give me the money and I'll know what to do with my life, right? Don't define the benefits so much for me. So, for example, like for Malaysia, car allowances, some people are like, we'll just give you the money and you decide what you want to do with the money instead, right? As opposed to providing you an actual ugly car.
And that's very true, actually. You know, I agree with you, actually, in this case that, you know, instead of deciding what kind of benefit that you want to give me, maybe just give me the money and then I will do whatever I want that makes me happy.
Okay, let's rewind. Why in the first place all these benefits existed, be it whether it's Facebook/Meta or Google? I think if you rewind maybe 10, 20 years ago, firstly, they needed to attract the top talent and they were competing a lot with investment banks who paid a lot more. So they wanted to have a very different working environment. Added to that was actually people worked for hours and hours and never left the office.
Exactly. I think it's more sinister than that. These perks are incentivizing you to work harder and stay in the office longer.
Yeah.
They're not actually perks then.
They're not, because you're just there 24/7. So please, if you're going to be there 24/7, you have to do my laundry. You have to feed me. Make sure I'm physically fit by offering me fitness classes. Companies are companies. What are they motivated for? They're maximizing shareholder value, maximizing profit. And yes, there are many stakeholders and now people think differently. But I do think, companies, right? Everything is the bottom line.
Yeah, but Shaoning, can we ask BFM for a sushi bar?
Good
we can,
idea.
We can try. We already have breakfast, I think we shouldn't
we'll
be
asking. We'll drop another Malik.
Yeah, we'll talk to Malik. We shouldn't be reaching for the stars. But it's coming up to 6:25. Up next, we have the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And to take us there is Show Me the Way by Peter Frampton. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run. This is, of course, I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Tan Chen Li and Philip C in an undisclosed location. And that song was Dancing in the Dark by Bruce Springsteen, also dedicated maybe to Pakatan Harapano. Maybe they're finding their way. They are talking about, you know, finding a new purpose, reorganizing the coalition. Maybe there's going to be a bit of a dancing in the dark, and we hope there'll be a little bit light later on, but it's 6:39 Wednesday, the 16th of March. And at this time of the morning, we're always looking at the international headlines that have caught our eye. Philip C is dying to get out.
I am.
Okay,
I am.
You go, Philip.
Well, you know, talking about dancing in the dark, perhaps this is what happened to this ship, Ever Forward, because exactly 1 year after Ever Given basically blocked the Suez Canal, another 334-meter vessel called the Ever Forward has run aground in the Chesapeake Bay in Baltimore.
Who chooses all these Ever? It's from the Evergreen Shipping Company, right?
It's from the Taiwanese company Evergreen, exactly. So forever, it's creating a lot of problems. And so, yes, deja vu again. This is the second time ever this kind of vessels have basically run aground, exactly 1 year after the Suez Canal incident. But fortunately, in this case here, it's not likely to prevent any other ships from transiting to the port of Baltimore.
Okay. What else has caught your eye, Jenny?
I was looking at more financial side of the things, which is US PPI numbers has risen 10% year on year. So it's pretty high, I would say. And so there's a lot of concern that because PPI, if you have an increased number there, then it will slowly translate to CPI at a later stage. So we are bracing for more inflation number here, which is probably going to send the market to a bit of jittery there.
PPI stands for producer price in inflation. What it does is it underscores inflationary pressures. But at the same time, what we did see was the New York State manufacturing activity weakened considerably in early March. Taken together, they hint at the Fed's dilemma. So on one hand, you have inflationary concerns rising, and I think you got the highest ever in four decades. Tomorrow, the FOMC actually meet. So inflation not great, you need to bring it down. But at the same time, manufacturing activity weaken. So what do the Feds do? You know, this is probably the worst time in the world to be a policymaker. Do you raise, don't raise? Do you raise by 25 bips or do you raise by 50 bips?
Yeah, because I think the issue here is that they're trying to kind of think about it from a cost of living standpoint, but you don't want to crimp investment, isn't it? That's the biggest challenge you have. And we, I think, always want to talk a lot about how do we get more people to be reinvesting in the economy, driving more private investments. And of course, raising rates just doesn't help the situation there.
So the Fed has two twin mandates, right? It's got jobs, job creation, job numbers, unemployment. They got to help. And the other one is price stability, which is inflation. And since there's runaway inflation, they need to do something about this. But if the economy comes back down and there's no job creation, then they can't achieve the other mandate. So it's a rock and a hard place,
right,
for them.
It's all interconnected, honestly.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm going to be looking at China because, you know, they are still doubling down on their country's dynamic zero policy towards COVID-19. And I'm looking at the Singapore Straits Times. So currently, there are 30 million people under various stages of lockdown in China. And this is on the back of the biggest COVID-19 surge in China since the start of the pandemic more than 2 years ago.
Yes, and in Shanghai, surprisingly, they're not going to impose lockdown. But they have they're encouraging companies instead to allow employees to work from home because I think Shanghai being a financial hub, they cannot afford to really put more lockdowns in this already. But Shenzhen, yes, they are. And you already can see the ripples of that effect in the market. Mm. I think the indices are like falling 5% thereabouts, which is one of the crazy ones that we haven't seen for a long time, actually. So I guess they're doing that for Shanghai, that they cannot afford another lockdown.
As you know, just to highlight how crazy markets are, right? Hong Kong whiplash between 7-8% of a decline before closing overnight 6% down. And then the Shanghai Composite Index, right, close to 5% also on the back of this announcement. But I think there's also renewed concerns over China's role or relationship with Russia with regards to the Ukraine war and whether sanctions will now be extended to China. So that did not help markets at all.
Yes, very good point. Because, you know, like yesterday we were talking about, I think the United States saying that, that Russia had reached out to China for help, right? Specifically for drones access. But what we've heard now recently overnight is that China has said that they do not want to be imposed sanctions. So I wonder if that's a subtle way of saying, no, we won't provide military support to Russia. And I think you're right. You know, you see a very two tale of two cities again, right? In the US, you see markets recovering, doing pretty well. But in China, not only do you have to contend with Russia, the Russian-Ukraine crisis, but as you know, Chen Li was saying, the COVID situation is not improving, which then debates on how zero COVID policy is going to be maintained.
And there is an effect on supply chain here, you know. So you're going to see a lot of prices going higher. And also, supply chain has also taken a bit of impact on oil prices. And you see it is coming down to about $100 per barrel right now. And another news I want to mention very quickly is tomorrow is also another, other than FOMC meeting, there's also Russian bond, whether it will default or not, because they're supposed to pay $117 million in interest tomorrow in US dollar, but they have sanction over US dollar. How are they going to pay?
I think the first round already, they have offered to pay it in rubles, which is pretty worthless at this moment because it's probably down more than 50%.
50% depreciation.
And nobody wants your rubles, right? So I think whatever said and done, I mean, even the rating agencies have somewhat said it's junk status at the moment. Let's face it, Russia is a bit of a pariah when it comes to their status in terms of financial markets. But that's all the international headlines for you. We'll be back with more messages. But to take us after the break is Cotton Mouth by Doobie Brothers, I think. Or You Can't Hurry Love by Supreme. Sorry, it's a confusing morning. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. You Can't Hurry Love by The Supremes with Diana Ross on lead vocals. What a lovely song. It is 6:50 in the morning, Wednesday the 16th of March. And at this time of the morning, we are looking through the local headlines. And I'll start. The Malaysian Reserve, of course, the headline is On Hafiz sworn in as Johor Menteri Besar. I think his role or his appointment was probably confirmed more on social media than on mainstream media. It was so talked about, partially because it was assumed that former Johor Menteri Besar, Dato' Hasni Mohamad, would be the next Menteri Besar because he did run a very successful campaign to help Barisan Nasional win the Johor state elections. And they did very well, whatever said and done. 40 seats out of 56 seats, right? And the talk was that he was very down to earth. He focused on real Johor issues which people wanted addressed. But in Malaysia, there's more twists and turns every day than a roller coaster ride.
Absolutely. There was so much backstory behind this. And you can get a sense that actually it wasn't such a joyous occasion within UMNO, that there were kind of splinters and splits over the appointment of this Menteri Besar. So very interesting to see how that also spill overs, right, to the UMNO General Assembly today on Wednesday when they kick off, right? And what does this mean for the direction of the party going forward? But you know what? Wins on the sails as they move forward, because really three results that have been very good for the Barisan National Component Party. So really, I think they are more buoyant perhaps compared to the DAP Secretary General meeting that's likely to take place over this weekend in Shah Alam.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe new leadership at DAP might actually also give them that win, you know, to kind of propel themselves forward with a new mandate and a new strategy.
So I wonder, you know, with the state elections, will GE mean new leadership candidates actually across the board, you know?
Well, there's calls for it, right? You know, everyone wants younger leadership, which is something that Muda is pressing for.
That's right, yes. And I think a lot of them are also campaigning on that and saying that they will be introducing new faces. But there are not a lot that I've seen so far. Maybe some here and there during the Johor election. I don't know.
Well, we're seeing one old face come back.
Yes, that's right.
The comeback kid. I mean, he's relatively young. He's not old, but he's a comeback kid. And we'll be speaking to him at 8:45. It's Rafizi. Do tune in because he wants to be number two at PKR.
Well, I think if you want to take on these leadership positions, it's very important that you don't play sick by faking your tests. Because if you look on the front...
I saw that, Philip C.
I know, it's terrible. If you look on the front page of The Star, people are doctoring their self-test kit picture and using another person's positive self-test result as some of the tricks used to claim fake that they're COVID-19 positive and claim for paid leave.
Wow, creative.
Naughty, naughty.
They need to send chief happiness officer there to check them out.
This is me, the anti-chief happiness officer here, going down. Like, let me stick some nasal swab up your nostril to actually confirm that really you have COVID or not.
And for me, I was looking at New Straits Times. Instead of politics and the fake positive test, I'm looking at Rail, which is our MRT3. And it has quite a lot of coverage on New Straits Times today. They talk about what exactly the project entail. And apparently there will be 5 main packages, 2 turnkey contractor for elevator work, for 2 underground work, 1 for integrated rail system, 1 for project management. And it will be open tender that will start in May. And that's quite a lot of information also on how many stations there will be. There will be 31, and it will be a stretch of 40 km, which is going to be elevated, and 11 km underground. So quite a bit of work there.
Yeah, I'm excited about this because of those 40 overstations, 8 to 10 of them are interchanged. So basically, this Circle Line will basically be able to interchange across all the other existing lines, which has always been a problem among our public transport system here. Now, what is very interesting is, if you heard yesterday in Parliament, our Transport Minister, Dato Sri Wee Ka Siong, said that the planned congestion charge in the heart of KL will only take place after this rail infrastructure is in place.
And one of the very important information here, which is how much it will cost for us. So $31 billion to build the 40 km line, $8.4 billion for land acquisition.
Ooh, how is this going to be funded? Because our fiscal state is not exactly a robust one.
You're exactly right. I think what we heard is that they're going through a sukuk, and a finance minister has said they want to enjoy the low interest rates environment and secure nearly close to 100% debt for this. I wonder, Chen Li and Xiaoning, with the recent bill, right, $50 billion, and if you recall, just a week ago, the MRT Corp CEO resigned. Mm. So I wonder what was the basis of that resignation and what has transpired since then?
Okay, this is the world of financial engineering, right? So what you do is you create an SPV, you put it off balance sheet, and voila, it doesn't necessarily become part of government funding. I don't know whether there'll be an implicit government guarantee to this, though. Question marks. But another piece of news that we're going to wait for is the telcos, because they're going to wait Putrajaya's decision on the 5G model. That's supposed to be announced later today, and this is according to the Malaysian Reserve, because the 5G is another episode that just keeps on giving, and more twists and turns than expected. But up next, we have the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And to take us there is Cotton Mouth by the Doobie Brothers. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.